Welcome to Into the Garden with Leslie here on News Radio WINA, sponsored by Dos Amigos Landscaping. I'm Leslie Harris, so happy to have you join us again on this gardening show. The goal of the show is to provide a fun and informative platform to learn about all parts of gardening, even the ones about which I am sadly ignorant, like today's concentration, vegetables. Our plant of the week is a vegetable, but I grow it for the flowers. We'll be chatting with Diane Burns, the head gardener at Pippin Hill Farm and Vineyards, one of the most popular wineries in our area here in Charlottesville. And we have a lot of wineries in our area here in Charlottesville. She's going to help us understand more about vegetable gardening than I could ever do. This is why I have people on the show who are so much smarter than I am. Lastly, our playlist will include how to play in your garden this week and what might be fun for you to listen to at the same time. So what's happening? I have a little bit of bad news and a little bit of good news. Let's start with the bad news and get it over with. As I'm driving down the roads here in Charlottesville this week, and this has happened every year for the last 5 years, and I'm such a dunce cap that I forget to look up this tree and find out what is flowering. It's a beautiful purple flower, and it almost looks like it's wisteria growing from the trees as you drive along the highway. But then when you look closely, you're like, no, that is actually part of the tree. That's not a vine on the tree. Those racemes are coming down from the tree branches. And so I was looking it up and, you know, Googling kinds of, well, you have to be a good Googler. And in this case, I'm doing pretty flowers, Piedmont area, May, purple, Virginia. I wasn't doing very well. So I cut to the chase and I texted my friend Carol Carter, who knows so much about gardening and trees and all good things. And she knew in a minute that this was a tree called Paulownia. That's Paulownia. So the good news is it's pretty. The bad news is that it's another one of those alien invasives. And those pretty flowers, those purple flowers that I'm admiring, spout off a zillion different seeds that go flying through the air, and it's populating our forests. And again, it's the reason we don't want alien invasives is that our insects don't eat them or benefit from them in any way. And therefore, that's just kind of like a hole in the forest where they can't use the material. And we need them, of course, to be able to feed themselves because they are very important to us, those insects. So pretty tree, but sad news. Here's some better news. I got a tip from Les Sinclair, who is one of the radio people at WINA, and he has been looking out for me to put good content on the radio show. And he said that the Gerber daisy puts out oxygen at night, and so you should have it next to your bed. Now, Les is a good guy, but why should I believe him? So I actually Googled it, and I found out from the Lung Health Institute that it's true. Thanks, Les. There was a list of 5 plants that put out the most oxygen. And so for people who have trouble with getting oxygen, that's fantastic, but it's also good for anybody. Last time I checked, we all need oxygen. On the list, there were a bunch of house plants, all of which I sort of recognized. My veg game isn't strong, my trees aren't strong, and my houseplant game isn't strong. That's me in a nutshell. Anyway, the Gerber daisy was the prettiest one by far. Another one that I did recognize is the mother-in-law's tongue, the Sansevieria. I'm kind of sad that they call it mother-in-law's tongue. It's really sharp and kind of ugly. And I'm a mother-in-law, and I'm okay, right, Jen? I'm pretty good. I'm not too sharp. All right, let's go on to the plant of the week before Jen calls me out on that. This is a vegetable, the plant of the week, but it's also beautiful. Like the Gerber daisy, it has more than one thing going for it. This is the Abelmoscus esculentus. I'm sure you recognize that name as the okra. Do you like okra? I do, but I think it's one of those things like cilantro, where you either really like it or really don't like it. I know that I have friends who say, why in the world would you want to eat cilantro? Basically, that smells like a stink bug. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I guess you're right. Somehow I have trained my fine mind to go above and beyond the stink bug and just eat the cilantro, which I love. I can't figure it out. Other people say that it tastes like soap, and I can't disagree with that either. So I don't know what's wrong with me, but I like cilantro and I like okra. A lot of what people don't like about the okra, I believe, is the sort of the, I don't know, texture of it. It's almost kind of gooey on the inside, like it came with its own secret sauce. And maybe people just want to put on their own sauce. So maybe that's part of the problem. But it is a beautiful flower. And it is a flower that is in the hibiscus family. And it's yellow with a purple center. The plant gets about 3 feet tall. It loves full sun. The flower only lasts for a day, but each flower becomes an okra. If you put it in your regular ornamental bed and you're gardening along or you're walking past it and you're like, oh my gosh, look at that. There's an okra. And you just pick it and pop it in your mouth. I must say, if you don't do that in time and it becomes a very large okra, I would avoid it altogether or just put it in your compost pile. But a nice new tender one, if you like okra, if you're one of those refined people like myself, it's a pretty flower and a tasty treat. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA, kindly delivered by Dos Amigos Landscaping. Coming up, we're going to talk with Diane Burns, the head gardener at Pippin Hill, about how to grow veg, because she knows so much more about it than I do. Welcome back to Into the Garden with Leslie, broadcasting on News Radio WINA. I'm Leslie Harris, and we're talking with Diane Burns of Pippin Hill Farm and Vineyards about vegetable gardening. Welcome, Diane.
Hi, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. How's your garden growing?
It's going great. We've had an awesome spring. It's been relatively cool, a cool spring. We've had a good amount of rain, and things are really growing nicely right now.
Oh, good. What's looking the best? What's like getting your attention and everybody who visits?
Well, I harvested in our reserve room kitchen garden beds. I harvested some mustard greens this morning. Wasabina, which is a bright, brilliant green, and Mizuna, which is a beautiful purple mustard green. So I harvested that for the kitchen. And then our Encore lettuce is looking really good. It's a mixed salad mix. So it's really pretty.
Unlike most vegetable gardens at home, or my vegetable garden, which is so tiny and so underused, the things that Pippin Hill does, they actually get into these delicious dishes that some chef is using. So that's kind of fun, aspirational for us normal people. How big is the garden there?
I have it broken up into three sections. One section is dedicated to nothing but herbs. We have the reserve room beds, which is mostly greens and lettuces, pak choy, Asian greens right now. And then our lower garden is fenced in, and that's where we kind of grow the big stuff. Right now we have carrots and beets, but in the summer we'll have peppers and squashes and tomatoes.
Awesome. About how many meals are provided by your gardens?
That's a tough question to answer, really. A lot of people ask me that. It's better to say everything that we grow in our gardens is for the kitchen here at Pippin Hill. Can I provide 100% for what they're using, all of their salads on the menu? Right about now, yes, I probably could. But when it's March or in July, when lettuces slow down a little bit, that would be difficult. So they do outsource some of the vegetables, and it's always from another local farm in the area.
Oh, that's good to know. So how do you get started on your plants? Do you do a whole lot of seeds, or do you use plugs, or how do you get started on those?
I would say 95% of what we grow is from seed, and we start in January, and we got a closet in the basement, and we've rigged it up with a shelving unit with grow lights and heating mats. And we start off with our leeks. That takes one of the longest times. And if we're doing Brussels sprouts, or broccoli, we'll start those two in January. But in February, we start getting into more of the lettuces that we're going to be putting out, some of the head lettuces. In March, we really ramp up and we start growing things from seed and the cell packs, again, on the heat mats and the grow lights. So by the end of March, you know, weather permitting, we're starting to plant things out in the garden. So hopefully by beginning of April, we're already providing the kitchen with an abundance of lettuces and greens.
That's so cool. And so it's funny, when I was thinking about what questions to ask you, I realized that it would be interesting for gardeners to learn about how a big garden operates. And yet it would be also very good for them to know, okay, so how does this apply to me? And I know that you have your own personal, I don't know how you have time, but you have your own personal veg garden. So how, contrast that with your winter, and how soon do you get started as an at-home gardener?
Well, the biggest difference here at Pippin Hill is that we do three seasons of gardening. We have cool season plants that we start in February and March. We have our warm season plants, the tomatoes and the peppers and the squashes. And then we basically repeat in the fall of our cool season plants, beets and carrots, more lettuces, more mustard greens. My own personal garden, it's not necessarily three seasons. Yes, I do some lettuces. I don't grow the variety that we grow here, but I do start off with lettuces right away, and spinach, of course. And then lots of tomatoes and peppers and some summer cucumbers, summer squashes as well. Don't do a whole lot of beets and carrots. Carrots are a little tricky, and you need a deep gardening bed. We have raised beds here in our lower vegetable garden. It's at least 18 inches deep, and that's the ideal environment to be growing carrots. And I don't have that in my own personal garden at home.
Yeah. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA, and this show is made possible by Dos Amigos Landscaping. We're talking with Diane Burns from Pippin Hill about vegetable gardening. So
let's go big scale again. And how do you decide what to plant for Pippin Hill? Does the chef tell you?
Yeah, that's a great question, Leslie. We meet with a chef in January, my garden assistant and I, Selena DeBrito, with a chef and the executive sous chef, Tori. And we sit down and we go over the garden plan that we did last year. And we talk about what did really well and what didn't work. The chef is thinking about the next season's menu. He's telling us what he'd like to see differently. We're letting him know what we can do really well and what's just not worth the real estate in the garden and would be best to probably outsource. So it's a collaboration of the four of us at that meeting that we come up with a garden plan. And from there, we start buying our seeds immediately. We generally buy from Johnny Seed up in Maine, and we get our order in by the end of January. Because this is a COVID year still, it's like any home improvement, gardening businesses have exploded. And we were astounded that Johnny Seed was sold out of so many seeds in January. And it was limited just to commercial growers. At that time, they weren't accepting orders from homeowners because they too were just overwhelmed. Man. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, the COVID has some good things going for it. Not very many, but one of them is that we have more gardeners everywhere. And that's unfortunate for supplies, but really good overall for the earth and for the people doing it. So then how do your decisions on plant choices for Pippin Hill influence Diane Burns, who's cooking at home? What do you like? What do you like to
Well, I definitely like to cook fresh from the garden. You know, I love my little kitchen garden that I have at my house. It's not real big, but it's enough for my husband and I. And it's enough for me to go out there on a daily basis and just pick a few lettuces and some spinach, some Swiss chard that I can chop up and saute real quick with some garlic and onion and have as an instant meal. So again, you asked about differences between a big garden and our small home garden. When we harvest here, we are harvesting bus tubs of produce for the kitchen. Your home garden, it's great. You just kind of harvest what you need that day.
Yeah.
You know, you don't feel the pressure of having to do that big harvest.
So let's talk about some common plants. For instance, even I, the non-veg gardener, I grow tomatoes. So what are the, can you just name a couple of your favorite tomatoes for taste, for looks, for... And when I say looks, obviously taste is more important, but sometimes it's kind of cool to have that awesome stripey thing on your plate. What do you like?
Yeah, I love the German striped tomato for an aesthetic look on the plate. It's kind of a pale yellow and orange, and it's variegated slightly, stripey inside. The chef likes all heirloom tomatoes for the heirloom tomato salad here at Pippin Hill. So Carbon did really well for us, and that's kind of a deep pink tomato.
Say the name again.
It's Carbon, C-A-R-B-O-N, just like the element. And Cherokee Purple did really well for us too last year. So a lot of the basic heirlooms do really well. Some of the hybrids that have done well for us in the past, Mountain Fresh is a nice hybrid tomato, low disease, it's disease resistant and has a high yield.
That sounds very cool. And so let's talk about the nitty gritty of maintenance. And you can, you know, relate this both to the big garden and your garden. It's kind of cool to hear about Pippin Hill because you got to be professional there. And when you get home, you might be exhausted and say, oh, I think my plants are fine. You just wait until tomorrow. What's your watering regime at Pippin Hill?
Well, I go by an inch a week. If we don't get that inch of rainfall in a week's period, we go out and we hand water. And right now it's still kind of cool. So maybe just once a week, we're doing a deep watering. Yesterday it got up to close to 90 degrees and Selena, she went out and watered everything. And then lo and behold, we got that 5 o'clock big thunderstorm that came in and downpoured. Regardless, it needed it. It needed it in the morning. If we wouldn't do it, it wouldn't have soaked up as much rain as we got yesterday. But in the heat of the summer, we're on a twice a week watering schedule, usually on Tuesdays and Fridays or Mondays and Thursdays.
And as always, it's much better to go deeply less frequently than a sprinkle every day, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do a lot of hand watering, especially with the lettuces. And the way that our garden beds are set up, it's a little bit difficult to run drip lines or soaker hoses in our reserve room lettuce beds. But down in the lower garden, we have 12 raised beds. They are each 16 feet wide by 16 feet long. And as I mentioned earlier, that's where we grow our big vegetables in the summertime, our tomatoes and our peppers and our squashes. And we do run soaker hoses and all of those beds in between the plants. And we just connect the hose. We let it run for a good 20 to 30 minutes and then, you know, disconnect and connect it to the next bed. Mm-hmm. I prefer soaker hoses. I feel like it has a really good overall watering as opposed to a drip line.
Right. And then of course, you're, you know, any foliar sort of problems that might come up are avoided that way.
Absolutely.
And that's important. What about fertilizers?
Good old compost. We compost our beds every spring. We buy from Panorama or Black Bear over the mountain. A good dose of compost. Yeah, that's our kind of natural organic fertilization program. If we feel that something is not thriving, strawberries, for instance, we have ever-bearing strawberries. They do require, they're heavy feeders, so they do require a little bit more. So we'll put a coat of 10-10-10 down. About probably the beginning of April, we put a side dressing of 10-10-10 down.
This is Into the Garden with Leslie, and we're talking on News Radio WINA. This show is sponsored by Dos Amigos Landscaping. And today our topic is one of the ones that is my real weakness, vegetable gardening. But luckily, Diane Burns is here to help us. A couple more questions about just the regimen of it. So you talked about composting and you talked about watering. So one more question about maintenance. How about weeding? Is that a plague for you all? Because these are display gardens at Pippin Hill. People are wandering around with a glass of Chardonnay. They want to look at beautiful things. And you know.
Yeah, you are right about that.
I tell you,
our raised beds help a lot. Because it's raised, it's up off the turf. It's not getting a lot of the windblown seed in there or grass seed in there. And so there's fewer weeds, and what weeds there are in there, it's just easier to weed. You're not bending over so much. On our lower beds, it's nice. We can even sit on those beds, the sides of the raised beds, and do some hand weeding that way. I have a nice, called the stirrup hoe. That's one of my best friends for weeding, running that through and weeding early too. When you see them coming up, run that stirrup hoe through and get them while they're young and fresh, and it's easy to get up, and it's not disturbing the root system of our vegetables that are growing near it.
Exactly, because they're tiny little roots that you're just stripping away. But I'm curious now, if you didn't have to have such a neat look because these beds are on display, the stirrup hoe leaves lots of little bits. Do you just go back and rake them up? Or, I mean, in my vegetable garden, I would probably just leave them to decompose on the side, you know, not hurting my plants, but just to sort of, you know, ripen off there. Do you have to remove your stuff though, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I do the same, Leslie. I leave my weeds on my home vegetable garden. But here at Pippin Hill, it's just a light hand rake up of the weeds. It comes up really easy. And another nice thing about that stirrup hoe is, like, you know, our kitchen gardens, we have nice, neat rows of carrots and beets right now on our lower bed. And when I run that stirrup hoe in between the rows, it chops up the soil too, and it makes it less compact. It adds, lets air get in there a little bit. When it rains, the rain kind of soaks in a little bit.
As a home gardener, leaving those, as you said, leaving those weeds is fine. How big does a weed have to get as a home gardener? So you're not thinking about aesthetics. You're only thinking about the health of your plants. How big does a weed have to get for you to think, ooh, that's impacting my plant. I better pull it.
I pull it instantly, no matter what size. When you're growing things like root vegetables, beets and carrots, radishes and turnips, you don't want weeds growing close by those things. You don't want the competition. You want that root to have that full space and energy to grow downward.
Because it's competition for the water and the nutrients in the soil. So that makes sense. So
right.
I have one more thing that I know that you must have to do. And I think that home gardeners might profit from this information. You've heard that story about people locking their car doors downtown, otherwise they might get extra zucchini by friends, because everything happens at once in the fall. So at Pippin Hill, does everything happen at once, or how do you make it so that it's succession harvesting
how
help home gardeners who don't want everything at once either?
So we do succession planting here at Pippin Hill. And we start off, as I said, with growing starts in our little grow closet down in the basement in February and March. And as a matter of fact, yesterday we were sowing more lettuce seed. So lettuce is growing right now in the garden. We're harvesting. We have lettuce starts growing in our little grow closet. We have lettuce starts that are hardening off right now in our cold frame. So when we do a complete harvest of the bed, we immediately pull that up and put our starts in. So for lettuces, we are probably sowing about once every 3 to 4 weeks, a new crop of plants.
What about the big guys? What about the zucchinis and the tomatoes where everything seems to happen at once? Can you do succession planting successfully with the big
Maybe two crops of zucchini, not for tomatoes and peppers. It's too long of a growing season. But I could probably do an early crop of summer squashes and then the seed directly into the ground and let it grow and then start a starter plant inside into in a pot. And so once that's harvested and you know how summer squashes are, they tend to start declining a little bit in the heat of the summer by July. And if it's done harvesting, we'll pull that out and put a new plant in and try to get another crop in. Okay. Not always successful. That window of opportunity is really tricky.
Yeah,
it's hard to do with summer crops.
So one more question about the succession. So I understand how you get your lettuces going in the inside downstairs, but now it's the middle of summer. Do you go back to inside downstairs to escape from the heat for your fall sowing for fall lettuce crops?
Right. That's a great question because we actually grow lettuce throughout the summertime and we've switched over to heat tolerant lettuces.
Oh,
and again, I go to Johnny's website and they make recommendations for some good heat tolerant lettuces. Red Skypos is a good heat tolerant lettuce, as is Starfighter. That is a wonderful heat tolerant lettuce. So we will start them in our grow closet, harden them off. And in July, when we're planting that new little plant in the ground, we put up shade cloth and give it shade. That is the key for summer lettuces to looking good, is to water it maybe 3 times a week for that first 2 to 3 weeks until the plant gets established and keeping it shaded. Yeah. If it's full sun, it just starts to wilt right away.
That's really great.
But we're able to grow lettuce all through July and August, those 95 degree hot and humid days because of that.
That's really hopeful for home gardeners. Let's end on that very hopeful note. This is Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA, brought to you by Dos Amigos Landscaping. And next, we'll be talking about what to do in your garden right now and what to listen to while you're out there. We call this the playlist because it's always a great time to play in the garden.
Welcome back to Into the Garden with Leslie on News Radio WINA. It's time for the playlist. The playlist is weekly practical information on what to do in your garden right now and maybe what to listen to while you're doing it if the sound of birds is not available to you. Sometimes I have large buses going by on Alderman Road. Hey, I do want to apologize, speaking of sound, for the sound on that interview. I thought about getting Diane to go with me again on Zoom for a better connection, but I realized you could understand most of what she was saying. And this is spring, and she and I are both very, very busy, so I just went with it. I know that our standards are kind of lower now because a lot of these podcasts and radio shows have to do with Zoom. That was particularly not a great recording, and thank you for your patience. Let's have her back on the show again, because do you know that she and her garden assistant are manning an apiary also there? And so she's learning all about bees. She was doing it under the instruction of professional beekeepers, and now she is becoming the professional beekeeper. So that and other vegetable topics, I think we have to have her on again, and I'll make sure the connection is better. I got a question from a listener, my friend Shirley Keith in Alexandria, about planting a tree in a container. And it's kind of an open-ended question, but here are the things that I wanted her to consider. Does she want the tree to live in that container forever? In that case, it should be a very large container, unless it's a very dwarfish tree, or she wants to bonsai or something like that. If she knows that the pot will stay in that place forever, she should fill it up with soil if she knows she never has to move it again. So the tree wants as much earth, meaning the soil that you provide for it in its pot, as possible for the roots to expand for it to grow really well. If she does want to make it lighter, she can fill up the bottom with just basically, she doesn't want it to be totally air, but she could fill it up with very lightweight things. What I use is old plastic plant pots and just sort of squish them together and fill the top with soil. The roots of the plant only are in the soil. They won't get as low as the air, otherwise they would dry off and be very unhappy. But if I want to move my pot, I don't have as much earth to move. The other thing to consider is that you want to plant it as you received it in its pot. So you don't want to plant it too shallowly where the roots are exposed or too deeply where the trunk of the little tree is covered up by soil. It needs that place to breathe right in there. So think about the size of your pot, the soil amount, and how permanent you want this situation to be. I have a fairly large Japanese maple in a very large pot in my on my terrace, and I'll never move that guy because I can't unless I got a forklift in there. Think about details like that when you're considering planting a tree in a pot. Here's a list of things for you to do in the garden this week. The irises are coming and going, and you can make a current plant really stand out by cutting away the ones that were good for the last couple of days. You know, they get all shriveled and awful, and so just, you know, clip away the yucky ones. Did you know that they are breeding irises to rebloom at different times of the year? And that's basically all I've bought in the last few years for myself. I'm like, why would I buy an iris that only blooms in spring? It is kind of strangely incongruous, like those repeat blooming azaleas, to see an iris in the middle of August. But there you go. I just think more flowers, more joy. So that's what I'm shopping for. But deadhead the ones that are in your garden now. Cut your peonies and bring them inside if you haven't staked them. If they start to flop or you see rain in the forecast, go out there and cut them and get them set up inside your house. Oh, and there's a tip about cutting peony buds. So they haven't bloomed yet. And you cut that branch, and if you wrap them in wet newspaper and put them in your refrigerator and keep them, I think, for a couple of weeks, apparently you can have blooms in the future. I have not tried this, but I've heard from several sources that it's a good one. So peony blooms after peony blooms are supposed to be over. Hey, that's a good thing. Daffodil foliage, it might be starting to drive you crazy. You know, you loved your daffodils, and you know you cannot do anything about that foliage. Because if you cut it away, or if you fold it or tie it up or something, it's going to cut off the xylem, and therefore the energy from the chlorophyll of those leaves will not get down to the bulb and feed the bulb for next year's bloom. So don't do that. Just let it lie down. But if it's flopping all over the place, there is one thing that we do in clients' gardens to make it look neat. We just kind of finger comb it. So if it's flopping everywhere, just take your fingers and make it go in one direction, the direction that you want. That kind of makes it so that your perennials that are coming up around it look better, and it just looks neater and more intentional. Do not do this if it's not driving you crazy. It's kind of a precious thing to do in the garden when there are other things to do. But it does help if you like that neat look. Last week I mentioned pre-pruning, so keep up with that. You know, your chrysanthemums, your tall phlox, your sedums, anything that's bothered you before by flopping in midsummer or late summer, you can pre-prune it now. It'll grow back lower with more flowers. It'll bloom a little bit later, but you'll still have a great show and no flops. And then deer control. If your deer are starting to get hungry and bold around your garden, there are a million ways that you can mix your own deer spray. I always used to use, as a personal gardener, an old 409 spray bottle and put an egg in there and add, you know, you can add Tabasco, a little bit of, say, Dawn detergent to make it sticky. You can add things that smell good to you but not to the deer, such as nutmeg or cinnamon. There are all kinds of things that you can add, or you can go buy your own spray. For LH Gardens, we use Deer Stopper, and it's highly effective. Here's a top tip. Spray under the leaves. If you get a light rain or some dew, it'll stick much better to the leaf if you spray up under the leaf. If you get a hard rain, you will have to spray again. And don't forget, there are granular products like deer scram that last a whole lot longer than a deer spray. They're far more expensive. And if you have a dog, he's going to love it because I think there's some dried blood in there. If you have a dog, probably go with the spray and just get out there and do it as often as you can after the rain. So what to listen to while you're gardening this week? Did you know that the Beach Boys recorded a vegetable song? And I listened to it. It's that typical Beach Boys sound, the wonderful, you know, multi-part harmony. But this one is all about vegetables. And I thought, well, that's kind of an interesting topic for the Beach Boys to record with. Oh, and apparently Sir Paul McCartney is there in the studio crunching on a celery sort of in time. He gets credit for playing the celery, basically. Well, as I read down through the YouTube reviews, it became apparent to me that the vegetables they were talking about were not the vegetables that are conventionally known to be healthy for you by all people. But when you think about it, when the song was recorded so long ago, the vegetable that they were probably talking about was far more illegal than it is today. So there you have it. Things change. This was fun. If you have any questions or comments or corrections, please reach out to me at Instagram. I am Leslie Harris LH. Or you can email me, leslieharris@lhgardens.com. I want to thank our sponsor, Dos Amigos Landscaping. I named this show Into the Garden with Leslie because I am really into my garden, and I want to get you into yours. See you next week.